Okay. Morning, the Sandy 12 budget division will come to order. Today's Wednesday, April 15, 2015. It's 8:30. We're in room 112 at the state capitol. Today we'll have the rollout of the E12 omnibus bill. I'll ask staff to go through the respective articles. We have a number of items that were posted online last night. Other things are being distributed. It's our intent to go through each article to have members respond to any questions that they may have of staff after each article, and then we'll open it up for testimony. We have about 22 people listed here. We're going to ask people to limit their comments to 4 minutes, and if they have something they would like to submit to us, we'll review that. We have the room till 1:30, and then we're looking at arrangements for this evening as necessary or other evening hours. So we'll proceed and ask staff to walk through the Senate File 811 delete all. We'll start with Article 1.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm going to describe Article 1 here. I'm working off the document in the upper right-hand corner marked SCS 0811A-1. Article 1, General Education, Section 1, originates from Senator Westrom bill. It would just explicitly state that a reciprocity agreement could include provisions or terms relating to early childhood special education services. Section 2, also from a Westrom bill, and you'll see throughout the entire bill several sections with language that looks somewhat like this. These provisions all came from the same Westrom bill, but amend different chapters of statute, so they're in different articles. But Section 2, dealing with pupil accounting, would provide that a pre-K child from an adjoining state whose family resides at a Minnesota address and is receiving early childhood special ed services from a Minnesota school district is considered enrolled in a Minnesota school district. Section 3, dealing with career and technical revenue, increases the proportion of career and tech expenditures eligible to be offset with career and tech revenue from 35 to 37.5. Section 4, general education revenue, strikes some obsolete language in paragraph A and makes a conforming change to the title of the extended support revenue program at line 3.22. Section 5, again, strikes some obsolete language and sets the formula allowance for fiscal 16 and for fiscal 17 and later. The increase in fiscal 16 is $58, or 1%, and the subsequent increase in fiscal year 17 is $59, an additional 1%. Section 6 on page 4 of the bill, extended support revenue, strikes some obsolete language, and then provides that extended support revenue can be used by ALCs serving high school students for academic purposes during the school day. This provision originated from the agency's bill. Section 7, the operating capital levy. This provision strikes some obsolete language, strikes an obsolete pupil unit reference, and then for taxes payable in fiscal taxes payable in 2017 and 2018, adjusts the equalizing factors to offset ANTC levies elsewhere in this bill, so that the entire bill itself is levy neutral. Section 8, transportation sparsity definitions. This originates in concept from Senator Saxhog bill. It's a little bit different in implementation than that bill was as introduced, but Section 8 introduces a new definition called area index, and then Section 9 makes reference to that area index for the purposes of calculating the transportation sparsity revenue allowance for a school district. Section 10 originates from Senator Wicklund bill. It would allow a district or cooperative to allocate up to 50% of its compensatory revenue according to a plan adopted by the school board. Section 11 on page 6 is the first of a series of sections originating from a bill authored by Senators Dahl and Pratt concerning the formation of an intermediate district. So Section 11 lists the districts that may form the immediate district. Section 12 provides for a joint school board, members, and bylaws. Section 13, kind of status provisions relating to the board. And I should add that all of these provisions are similar in concept to the law governing the other three intermediate school districts. Section 14 on page 7, dealing with powers of the joint board. Section 15, dealing with the referendum required for approval of the intermediate district formation. Section 16, contributions, disbursements, contracts. 17, the agreement between the member districts of the intermediate district. Section 18 provides that the board can also provide other educational programs as requested, except for post-secondary programs or services. Section 19 lists other membership and powers given to the intermediate board. Section 20 wasn't in that original bill as introduced, but it would provide that for the purposes of calculating compensatory revenue for the intermediate district, the department has to look back to the prior year enrollment counts for the South Metro Educational Cooperative. Without this section, the intermediate district would not be eligible to generate compensatory aid in its first year of existence. Section 21 is from a Senator Weber bill dealing with the exemption of Hendricks School District from the General Reciprocity Agreement with South Dakota. Section 22 is from a Senator Jensen bill. It sets the referendum allowance for Owatonna Public Schools for taxes payable in 2014 and thereafter. Section 23 consists of general education appropriations, which Mr. Wilms will detail when we get to the appropriation tracking spreadsheet. That concludes Article 1.
Thank you. Questions on Article 1? Article 2.
Mr. Chair, members, Article 2 is education excellence. And just to note off beforehand, there's one provision that is missing from the text but is actually carried in the spreadsheet, and it relates to the BIE provision with some aid for the four tribal contract schools. So that's something that will be added as a part of an author's amendment because just our oversight did not get the text.
That's noted. It will be addressed on Thursday.
Okay. Then moving along, Sections 1 and 2 are from the Senator Kent Senate File 1364 related to Student Support Services Personnel Grant Program. Mm-hmm. And then Section 3 is derived from the Senator Stumpf QComp removal bill that then also qualifies cooperatives for the QComp. So several of the sections relating to that. It starts in Section 3, it goes 4, 5, 6, 7, Section 8, 9 is approval process for the QComp, and 10 is another one of the cooperatives. And then Section 11 is the alternative compensation revenue, which also has cap removal and then the amount of the revenue for intermediates and cooperatives. Section 12 on page 20 is the beginning of a Senator Klassen Senate File 524, which is the Principals Leadership Development. So that's the Principals Academy at the U and the Academy at the Minnesota State University, Mankato. Then Section 13 is another Senator Klassen Senate File 916. That is the teacher-powered schools and the grants for those schools. Then Section 14 is the Senator Johnson provision for Senate File 1206, which is the full-service community schools. And that actually, it's one section but goes for several pages, so that will take you to page 28. Then on page 28, towards the bottom, is Section 15. It starts at 28.28. That's actually a technical fix that came from discussions with the department staff and the nonpartisan staff. And it's regarding the calculation for achievement and integration levy. Then Section 16, where the operative language is on page 29, is from a Senator Dahl Senate File 133, which allows educational cooperatives and education districts to receive the teacher development evaluation revenue from fiscal year 2015. Then section 17 is the agriculture educator grants, which was a Senator Jensen sent file 961, and provides grants for ag educators or grants to schools to support paying ag educators during the summer. Then section 18 is derived from Senate file 1276, I think, which was originally, we heard it as a Senator Pappas bill, but then now I think Senator Schmidt has taken over the authorship of that bill. And that is grants for educational partnership pilot program in three different communities around the state. And then section 19, and also that will actually be part of the author's amendment too, because we usually don't do our appropriations in one separate section. It will be moved into a subdivision of section 19. And then as stated before, the appropriations are going to be dealt with in Mr. Williams' spreadsheet. So that is actually several pages for this article. That will take you to the end, of which is on page 40. And then that will begin Article 3 there.
Thank you. Questions on Article 2? Article 3.
All right. Mr. Chair, members, Article 3 is called Standards and Assessments. The entirety of the language of the sections, not so excluding the appropriations, is from Senator Kent, Senate File 343, which is the physical education standards. So that's, again, several pages, but Section 4 is about exclusion from FIAD class. The Section 5 is like performance reports, which is on page 43. And then Section 6 on page 44 is the beginning of the appropriations. And that takes you to Article 4 on page 45.
Thank you. Questions on Article 3? Article 4, please.
Mr. Chair, members, Article 4 is Charter Schools. Section 1 came, I believe, from actually discussions during the policy bill, where there was an issue with open enrollment or enrollment for pre-kindergartners with a disability in a particular charter school that serves 90% of their children enrolled are eligible for special education services. So that allows for that pre-kindergarten enrollment. Same with Section 2. And then Section 3 is from Governor's Bill with changing the name of extended time revenue to extended support revenue. So it's just a conforming change. There was a provision, I believe, in Article 1 that did that change. And Section 4 is the appropriations.
Thank you. Questions on Article 4? Article 5.
Mr. Chair and members, Article 5, Special Education, beginning on page 48. There are a number of sections here all relating to a Senator Rest bill concerning kind of the acceleration of special ed payments for certain charter schools that have very high rates of pupils with an IEP. So Section 1, the new language is on page 49, is basically a definitional change specifying that the general ed revenue for an eligible charter school equals their regular gen ed revenue plus their unreimbursed cost as calculated later. Section 2 is a technical cross-reference update from the governor's bill. Section 3, back to the REST bill, defines unreimbursed costs, eligible special ed charter school, and these schools, there are three of them. They're Lionsgate, Metro Deaf, and Fraser. And to be eligible, the percent of students eligible for special ed services equals at least 90% of the charter school's total enrollment. Section 4 on page 50 specifies the special education aid for these eligible special education charter schools. And again, the purpose is to accelerate the aid payment paid to these schools, given their high enrollment of special ed students. Section 5 originates from that Westrom bill again. The new language is on page 51. It would provide that a school district participating in a reciprocity agreement can enroll and provide special education, special instruction and services when that to a child from an adjoining state whose family resides at a Minnesota address if the district has completed child ID procedures for that child to determine eligibility for special ed services. Section 6, now we're back to the Senator Rest bill concerning special ed aid. The new language begins on the bottom of page 52. It's basically kind of conforming language to ensure that on net, the special ed aid in the system is net zero, except that it's accelerated in terms of payment to the special ed charter school. Section 7 on page 53 originates from the MDE technical bill. It inserts a word that was inadvertently excluded at lines 54.13 and 54.17. Section 8 is from the REST special ed bill. The new language is at paragraph D on page 55, and it would provide that for an eligible special ed charter school, the final payment be accelerated from the normal charter school final payment schedule. Section 9, the new language is on page 56, again from the REST bill, just to ensure that the calculations between the resident district and the special ed, the eligible special ed charter school, are properly calculated for all attendance programs. Section 10 on page 57 is the beginning of the appropriations section, and that concludes Article 5.
Thank you. Questions on Article 5? Article 6.
Mr. Chair, members, Article 6 deals with facilities and technology. Section 1 originates from Senator Dahl proposal, Senate File 76. It strikes or repeals a number of subdivisions in the existing health and safety section. So the striking continues with the exception of subdivision 6, continues through to page 63 of the bill. Basically, what's happening here is the bill strikes language relating to the calculation of the revenue, aid, and levy for the health and safety revenue, because those aids and levies are folded into the long-term facilities maintenance proposal that I'll describe next. Section 2 is the beginning of the new coded section relating to long-term facilities maintenance revenue. Subdivision 1 specifies the amount of the revenue. In summary, the revenue steps up in 2017, 18, and 19 in a similar fashion as was originally introduced, but at a different allowance level. So this would direct additional revenues to districts who were previously not eligible for the ALT facilities program. Subdivision 2 on page 64 provides that revenue for a charter school is equal to the average statewide increase under the other provisions of the bill for school districts. Subdivision 3 provides that a member district, a district that's a member of an intermediate district, may include in its revenue costs related to intermediate district or other cooperative unit facilities. Subdivision 4 requires that in order to qualify for revenue in this section, a school district or intermediate district must have a 10-year facility plan. This is a similar requirement as is currently in the ALT facilities statutes. Subdivision 5 deals with bond authorization. So a school district would be authorized to issue bonds under this proposal. That would be a similar authority as currently exists under the ALT facilities program. And the debt service on those bonds could be paid with revenue under this section. Subdivision 6 authorizes a district, instead of bonding, to make a levy, an annual levy, for costs related to an approved plan. Subdivision 7 specifies the amount of the equalized revenue. So for fiscal 17, 18, and 19, the equalized portion of the revenue is equal to $200, $300, and $400 times the adjusted pupil units for for all districts. Subdivision 8 specifies a calculation for the long-term facilities maintenance equalization levy. The equalizing factor is set at 125% of state average ANTC per adjusted pupil unit, except that there's an alternate calculation. For the purposes of this subdivision only, there's an alternate calculation that I'll describe in a few minutes. Subdivision 9 specifies the equalization aid. 10, the unequalized levy. A district can make an unequalized levy over and above their equalization revenue up to their allowed revenue. Subdivision 11 and 12 specify the allowed uses and the restrictions or the disallowed uses. Subdivision 13 requires that the portion of long-term facilities maintenance revenue not recognized in the debt service fund be maintained in a reserve fund in the general reserve account in the general fund. Section 3 on page 67 is this alternate calculation of ANTC for the purposes of calculating equalization only for the long-term facilities maintenance proposal. So in paragraph B, the new language at page 67, line 24, provides that ANTC would be reduced by 50% of the value of Class 2A ag land before the application of the ANTC growth limit caps. So the practical effect of this is to bring a few dozen districts back onto the equalization formula. Section 4 originates from a Senator Wieger bill regarding proceeds from the school endowment fund apportionment. The new language is on page 68. For fiscal 16 and later, a district must reserve for technology future increases in the apportionment from the school endowment fund. Section 15 originates from a Senator Schmidt bill requiring the commissioner to research existing one-to-one device programs, establish best practices, and make a report to the legislature. Section 6 on page 68 is the first of two sections related to the conveyance of Fair School properties to other districts. This was in a Senator Rest bill. That bill also contained the conveyance language itself, but that subdivision, because it relates to a property that was previously bonded for, would require a 3/5 vote and is not carried in this bill. Section 6 deals with the Fair School Crystal transition. It provides for student enrollment, for the calculation of compensatory revenue, for the provision of pupil transportation. And just note that the section is effective the day after the conveyance is effective. So if the conveyance were not effective in a different vehicle, this section would not become effective. Section 7, similar provisions for the Fair School downtown facility, its conveyance to Minneapolis School District, similar provisions and effective date. Section 8 originates from a Senator Jensen proposal. This is the IT certification partnership. Excuse me. It requires the commissioner to issue a request for proposals, details who would be schools would be eligible to participate in the program, outlines the expectations of the provider who would be selected, requires the provider to recruit up to 200 schools to participate, requires the department to make support available to the provider, and requires a report jointly developed by the provider and the commissioner to be delivered to the legislature. Section 9 is related to that previous section. Section 9 cancels an appropriation that was made for a similar proposal for fiscal year 2015. A proposal was never selected under that bill. The appropriation remains unspent. This section cancels it, which allows us to carry those unspent funds forward to offset costs in this bill. Section 10 is the appropriations. That gets us to page 73. Section 11 is the repealer. This section would repeal sections related to the long-term facilities maintenance proposal the all facilities programs that would be rolled in to the long-term maintenance revenue proposal.
Thank you. Questions on Article 6? Article 7.
Mr. Chair and committee members, beginning with Section 1, this provision would increase the reimbursement rate for students in first grade for each fully paid breakfast. This is effective in fiscal year 17. Section 2 then prohibits districts from charging a fee to students in first grade, effectively providing breakfast at no charge to first graders. This is effective also in fiscal 17. Section 3 relates to a community service fund account transfer proposal by Senator Lori. What this allows independent school district number 91 Barnum to do is transfer any positive account balances between the reserve accounts for early childhood family education and school readiness. This authority is provided until 2018. There's also the requirement that the proposed transfer needs a written resolution authorizing it and then also public testimony effective immediately following enactment. Section 4, fund transfer fiscal year 2016 and 2017. This is similar in nature. It was passed in the 2013 session in law and provided this authority in 2014 and 2015, and so this provision simply extends that authority for another biennium and allows school districts to petition the commissioner for a fund transfer in a similar manner, and the commissioner must approve the request as long as it does not increase state aid or provide additional property tax authority for the district. The school board must adopt a resolution that stating that the fund transfer will not diminish instructional opportunities for students. Section 5 is the appropriations that will be covered in my fiscal tracking sheets.
Thank you. Questions on Article 7? Article 8.
Mr. Chair and members, Article 8, Libraries, begins on page 75 of the bill. The first two sections originate from a Senator Stumpf proposal that modifies the allocation of library aids for regional library basic system support. Section 3 is the appropriations that Mr. Williams will address in his tracking sheets.
Thank you. And we'll note there will be an author's amendment addressing Article 8 on the libraries. There is agreement by various groups of the department, libraries, regarding further reflecting their intent, and I'll have that Thursday. Article 9.
Article 9, Section 1. This requires school readiness program providers to offer at least 550 hours per year of program content and instruction to each eligible child. The program provider may establish a waiting list if funds are not sufficient to serve every eligible child. Additionally, this phases in requirements for teacher licensure within the school readiness program. This provision would be effective in fiscal year 17. Section 2, Subdivision 5, this provision eliminates the requirement that school districts can submit a copy of each contract with additional service providers along with the biennial plan that school districts are required to submit for their school readiness programs. This is effective for fiscal year 17. Section 3 would prohibit school districts from charging fees for eligible four-year-old children under Subdivision 15, Clause 1, who are enrolled fewer than 550 hours per year. Again, this is effective fiscal year 2017 and later. Section 4, this clarifies eligibility for the school readiness program. The key change here is that it makes eligible all children who are at least four-year-olds on September 1st. There are no additional changes in terms of eligibility for three-year-olds. Those are still allowed based on having one or more risk factors. This section is effective for fiscal year 2017 and later. Section 5, this provision basically states that a program that has eligible children on a waiting list must give enrollment priority to children who have one or more of the identified risk factors from the previous section. Section 6 is the appropriations. You'll see in paragraph C, there's an entitlement amount that's set in law or codified in law, and then that is effective for fiscal year 2016 and later, and that would cover fiscal year 16, 17 and later. Section 7, paragraph F, this relates to the provision discussed earlier allowing students that whose family resided in Minnesota address to receive developmental screening.
So Senator Westrom proposal.
Senator Westrom's right. proposal. And Section 8 is the appropriations, which will be covered in my fiscal tracking sheets.
Questions on the article? Proceed.
Mr. Chair and members, Article 10, Prevention, begins on page 82. Section 1 originates from Senator Johnson proposal dealing with information on the childhood developmental screening program. It would require the screening program to record the date of the child's most recent comprehensive vision examination, if any. Section 2, the new text is in the middle of page 84. And this, again, is from the Senator Westrom bill. It would provide that a pupil who meets the definitions described earlier is eligible to receive developmental screening under this section. Section 3 originates from a Senator Jensen proposal, Senate File 441. It increases the allowance for youth after-school enrichment revenue. Section 4, after-school community learning grants, is from a Senator Dahl proposal, Senate File 1017. It establishes a competitive grant program, requires the commissioner to develop the application, requires the commissioner, gives the commissioner some direction as to how to allocate the grants, and requires the award of the grants to be sort of equitably distributed geographically, given priority to programs that collaborate with existing sort of community structures and resources. Section 5 would require, it relates to the Johnson Vision Comprehensive Vision Examination section earlier, requires the commissioner to submit a report to the committees of the legislature detailing the number and proportion of children in each district who report having had a comprehensive vision examination disaggregated by age at the time of screening. Section 6 are the appropriations for this article, and that concludes Article 10.
Thank you. Questions on Article 10? Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Arneson, where is the appropriation for the vision screening?
Mr. Wilms?
Or Mr. Wilms, sorry.
Mr. Chair and committee members, when the revised language was submitted for a fiscal note, the note came back as having no cost to the state, and so an appropriation is not included for that.
Senator Pratt.
So this effectively becomes a policy provision?
Mr. Chair and committee members, there is a report required, and that's covered under the agency portion of that proposal. So that would be the fiscal nexus.
And that's how much?
Mr. Chair and committee members, that was contained within the agency's budget to basically produce that report.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Further questions on Article 10? Article 11, please.
Mr. Chair, members, Article 11 is self-sufficiency lifelong learning.
Very nice.
Begins on page 87 okay. of the bill. This article consists entirely of appropriations, which will be described later on Mr. Wilms' tracking sheet.
Questions? And again, we'll be going to the track sheet soon. Article 12.
Mr. Chair and committee members, Article 12, Section 1 relates to Senator Bonhoff's proposal regarding study abroad programs. It requires annual reporting by school districts and charter schools with enrolled students who participate in a foreign exchange or study or other travel abroad program. Districts and chartered schools are also encouraged to adopt policies to help ensure students' health and safety while abroad. It also requires program providers to register with the Secretary of State to be eligible to offer a program under this existing statute. This is effective for the 2015-2016 school year. Section 2, background checks. This allows the department to receive fees from processing of teacher background checks from the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. You'll see it on my tracking spreadsheet at the end from the Special Revenue Fund. Section 3 are appropriations. Section 3, 4, and 5 are appropriations that will be covered by the fiscal tracking spreadsheets. And this concludes Article 12.
Questions? Article 13.
Article 13 is the forecast article. This is something that's included in every E-12 omnibus bill. It's basically a technical article that makes conforming changes to appropriations consistent with the February 2015 economic forecast. And that concludes Article 13.
Thank you. Questions on 13? Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wilms, this caught my eye last night, and it's interesting to see it here in the technical adjustments. Basically, a $380,000 decline, $381,000 decline in basic education revenue between 14 and 15. Do you have insight into what caused that type of drop?
Mr. Wilms?
Mr. Chair and Senator Pratt, are you referring to the fiscal tracking spreadsheet or which?
Well, I'm either looking at line 93.5 or the fiscal tracking spreadsheet. It just seems odd to me that given the programs that were implemented and expected to come up to full implementation in the second year of the biennium, we'd see a $300 million drop forecast to actual.
93.9.
Okay, Mr. Wilms.
Mr. Chair and committee members, if we look at the fiscal tracking spreadsheets, I think that would be more accurate. General education aid, the appropriations should be lower. For fiscal year 14 and 15.
Yeah.
And you're referring to fiscal year 15.
Right.
I would have to consult my notes given that, but I could work with MMB and see. Off the top of my head, nothing comes to mind in terms of that, but I'd be happy to look into that further. I would have to consult my notes because off the top of my head, I don't think I'm prepared to comment.
Okay, Senator Pratt, that's acceptable?
That's acceptable.
Okay. Thank you. We'll proceed to the tracking sheets.
Yep.
And we'll identify which one. We have a few before us. And I believe everything's been posted online yesterday.
Yep, Mr. Chair and committee members, and actually following up on Senator Pratt's comment,
yes.
My suspicion is that it has to do with the aid payment shift restoration. But I'll, again, look into
that. We'll follow up.
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair and committee members, we'll start with the aid appropriations tracking spreadsheet. The title is E-12 Education Fiscal Year 2016-2017 Budget. E-12 Omnibus, it's for the Senate File 811A1 Amendment. Beginning on line 1, you'll see on the left the...
So everybody make sure we're on the same page. Y'all have that document. Okay, please proceed.
So for the rows, those will be numbered. You'll see on the far line of the spreadsheet the line number is indicated. And then on top, you'll see the columns are indicated with letters. So if you have particular questions, feel free to reference those and play Battleship with me. Mr. Chair and committee members, line 2, the formula allowance increased 1% for fiscal year 16. That's a 1% increase, added $58 to the formula. fiscal year 17, another 1% increase that adds $59 to the formula. That would be ongoing. For the biennium, that's $170.5 million. Line 5, operating capital equalization. You'll notice that there's only increased appropriations in the tails of approximately $75.3 million. This has to do with the levy provisions that are included. In order to create a net zero levy target, the offset occurs from the operating capital program. Equalization is increased to save levy from that program, thereby creating a levy-neutral program. Transportation sparsity, line 6. This relates to the provision already discussed. It's $2 million for the biennium. The provision is ongoing. The Owatonna referendum, line 7. This had already been discussed, providing clarification. There's also a levy change regarding that. $294,000 ongoing, but increasing in the biennium. Line 8, Senator Weber's proposal, Hendricks reciprocity. This increases general education aid by additional students being served in Minnesota. Line 9, Minnesota South Dakota Early Education Services. This was Senator Westrom's proposal regarding eligibility for early education services for a Minnesota family from South Dakota. Line 12, non-public pupil transportation, and line 13, non-public pupil aid. These two programs are linked to the formula allowance increase, so when a formula allowance increase occurs, these programs also rise. You can see $482,000, $481,000 in each for the biennium. Career and technical aid. This is an aid and levy mix program. It provides reimbursement up to a certain percent for eligible expenses that districts submit. Currently, the reimbursement rate is 35%. Senator Wieger's proposal would raise that to 37.5%. So that concludes the changes in Article 1. Moving on to line 23, this is Article 2, alternative compensation. As mentioned earlier, this is the proposal that eliminates the cap on alternative compensation, allowing other districts to join and receive aid and provides levy authority. For the fiscal year 16 biennium, that's $19.2 million. Down to line 29, this is an increase to the Reading Corps program, $4.6 million in the biennium. And in the tails, you'll see that the increase is actually $4 million, so a portion of this, $600,000, is one-time money for the biennium. Line 30, tribal contract schools, again, another provision that is linked to the formula. However, this program was capped in its amount, and this proposal this line item incorporates the lifting of the cap, but also the formula allowance increase. Line 31, compensatory pilot grants. This extends the base for a year in fiscal year 16 by $5 million to $7.3 million, and then reverts it to the original base level as forecasted of $2.3 million. Line 33, concurrent enrollment. This is the College and the Schools program, $2 million increase each year for $4 million over the biennium. Line 34, student support services personnel grants. This is an $8 million one-time appropriation to establish a grant fund, and it is one-time in nature and does not extend to 17, although the grants may be paid out in additional fiscal years. Line 35, Success for the Future. This adds $40,000 each year for the Bemidji and Bemidji State University and Red Lake School District to provide teacher preparation. Line 36, Collaborative Urban Educator. This adds $620,000 to the program that trains teachers at four higher education institutions within the state. Line 38, Minnesota Foundation for Student Organizations. There's no appropriation change on this line. However, there was an organization that dissolved, and it was the HERO organization, and that appropriation was then added to the FFA budget. So there's no change to state aid, but a reallocation. Line 39, museum and education center grants. This is a line item that collects the different museum and education center appropriations. This includes the Academy of Science, the Minnesota Children's Museum, the Duluth Children's Museum, Headwater Science Center, and the Works Museum. Line 40, teacher development and evaluation. This is the first instance where we'll have to reference fiscal year 15. This increases the entitlement by $20,000 to bring in cooperatives and other agents or organizations to allow them to generate teacher development or to receive teacher development and evaluation revenue. Given the aid payment shift schedule, this results in a $2,000 increase to the fiscal year 16-17 biennium. Line 43 is $1 million for STEM grants, as discussed earlier. Line 44, teacher-powered schools proposal. Line 45, full-service community schools. Each of those three programs will receive $1 million for the biennium, and those are one-time appropriations. Line 47, ag educator grants. As discussed prior, that's $500,000 one-time for the biennium. Additionally, Indian teacher preparation grants, that's $230,000 each year, ongoing. 49, excellence in teaching grant, that is $400,000 for the biennium in one-time appropriation. The Regional Career and Technical Advisory Committee, that was Senator Weber's proposal, and you'll notice below that there's also an appropriation that is part and parcel with that. It's related to that of a smaller amount. So that's $200,000 each year, one-time money, $400,000 for the biennium. Line 52, the Experiential Learning Pilot Project, that's $285,000. $1,000 in fiscal year 16. That's a one-time appropriation. Line 53, video resource grants. This is Senator Johnson's proposal related to training teachers on the use of public media resources. That's a one-time appropriation of $200,000 for the biennium. Line 54, Minnesota Council on Economic Education grants. This was a Senator Hoffman proposal. $200,000 for the biennium. Principals Academy, as discussed previously, that's $200,000 for the biennium, a one-time appropriation. Wilderness Inquiry, another $200,000 one-time appropriation for the biennium. It was Senator Wicklund's proposal. Race to Reduce Water Conservation Grants, Senator Wieger's proposal, $150,000 one-time for the biennium. Line 60, Senator Torres Ray's proposal, Network for the Development of Children of African Descent. That's $140,000 in the biennium, one-time. Minnesota Learning Resource Center is $100,000 one time for the biennium. We Win Planning Grant, that's the Matthew Little Institute, that's $100,000 one time for the biennium. Line 63 is related again to Senator Weber's proposal, the Southwest Regional Career and Technical Education Office, that's $100,000 one time in the biennium. Line 65 is Senator Stump's proposal, Northwestern Online College and the High School. And that's $100 one time for the biennium. That concludes Article 2, and I can move on to Article 3 if there are no questions.
Any questions, members?
Okay. Line 70, statewide testing. This relates to a drafting error made by myself and Senate staff. Relates to when an appropriation at the end of the biennium is fixed at a certain amount. If the appropriation in the next biennium is lower, that base needs to be reset. That base language was not included. And so this effectively resets the base to how it was forecasted in accordance with legislative intent. It results in a $4.6 million savings in the first biennium and a $4.9 million savings in the second biennium.
Madam Chair? Thank you, Madam Chair. I thought the door was open. Mr. Wilms, this doesn't include any savings based on testing changes that were discussed in the original bill?
Mr. Wilms.
Madam Chair and Senator Pratt, no, this does not include any savings based on that.
Okay. Thank you.
That concludes.
Mr. Wilms.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That concludes Article 4. Or Article 3. Article 4, there are no changes. That's the charter school program. Article 5, special education, regular. You'll notice that there are savings in the first biennium and then also in the second biennium. This relates to the cross-subsidy reduction aid within special education. Anytime the formula allowances increase, it generates a small amount of savings in special education. This tracking books those savings. Line 79, accelerated unreimbursed cost aid. This is the proposal mentioned by my colleague, Mr. Arneson, related to the schools, the charter schools receiving accelerated cost aid based on their budgeted expenses. Line 80, seclusion and restraint reduction training. That's $100,000 in fiscal year 16 only to train teachers in the reduction of seclusion and restraint. Article 6, long-term maintenance equalization aid. Line 85, you'll see that actually for this article, there are certain programs ending and certain, you know, this is a new program beginning, but to be clear, the net change among the long-term facilities maintenance practice or long-term facilities maintenance equalization aid is approximately $43 million. But you'll see that that's the increment for that. The additional 63, which it brings it to, is from additional programs such as alternative facilities bonding aid and deferred maintenance equalization aid being zeroed out in fiscal year 17. Line 88, telecommunications access, that's $3 million in one-time funding. Line 90, 89 and 90, again, are those programs that are zeroed out in fiscal 17. Line 91, IT certifications. So this is the additional amount appropriated for this. The total appropriation is $500,000. However, it includes $300,000 that was a cancellation from the prior year biennium. We'll see at the end of the spreadsheet. We don't have to, the chair does not have to count that against his target under the budget rules, joint operating budget rules. So this is the increment added to that existing appropriation. Line 92 was a Senator Thomasoni proposal for innovative technology cooperatives. It's $150,000 each year, $300,000 for the biennium. Line 93 is a Senator Stump proposal for a Northwest Mobile Manufacturing Lab. That's $200,000 for the biennium. 94 was a Hoffman proposal for the Anoka Fabrication Lab. That's $100,000 one time. And line 95, you'll see in fiscal year 15, we're carrying a cancellation, and then in fiscal year 16, a reappropriation of the $300,000. That concludes the facilities and technology article.
So on to Article 7.
Article 7, line 99.
Any questions I should ask first? I presume not. Article 7, Mr. Wilms.
Article 7, line 99, again, this is the school breakfast without fees to first graders proposal that I mentioned. It costs $4.2 million in the biennium. It's effective in fiscal 17, so 4.2 for fiscal 17. This is ongoing, so you'll see in the biennium on in column S, it's $8 million ongoing for the biennium. That concludes Article 7. Article 8, line 104, this is an increase to basic system support for regional libraries. That's $2.9 million for fiscal year 17, and then ongoing. Line 112, school readiness. This adds $8 million in fiscal year 16 before the provisions in the proposal take effect, and then it adds $62 million in the base, so it raises the appropriation to $74,170,000 ongoing from fiscal 17 to 18 and 19. Again, the way the appropriations are written, it is effectively a cap at that amount. Line 113, early learning scholarships, that's $5 million each biennium, $2.5 million each year. Line 115, as addressed earlier, this is related to the formula allowance increase. ECFE aid is a linked program. Line 117, the parent-child grant. This is a Senator Bonhoff proposal. The original amount in the base is $250,000. This raises it to $500,000. Of that amount, $100,000 is an ongoing increase, so a base increase of $100,000, and then the balance, which would be $150,000 each year, is a one-time appropriation in fiscal years 16 and 17. That concludes Article 9. Article 10, line 123, community education aid. This is an aid levy mix, so we'll see it on the levy tracking spreadsheet. It increases the formula amounts for youth after-school care revenue, and that's $223,000 for the biennium, $465,000 in the second biennium. Line 124 and 125, this is an equal amount increase, $900,000 to the Northside Achievement Zone and the St. Paul Promise neighborhood, and that would be an ongoing amount, $900,000, so $450,000 each year. Line 126, community learning grants, is a $1 million one-time appropriation. Line 127, Greater Minnesota Education Partnership Pilots, this is a $600,000 one-time appropriation. Article 11, there are no changes, and so we'll go to the next page. Line 139 is an operating adjustment, similar to all the agencies. It's an across-the-board increase of $800,000 in the first biennium, $1.1 million in the second biennium. Line 144, physical ed standards review and report. This is Senator Kent's proposal, and it provides different one-time funds for rulemaking and different requirements of that proposal, and then it also contains an ongoing appropriation for an FTE to oversee the process. Line 145 is the Board of Teaching. There is a $100,000 base increase each year, $200,000 for the biennium and in both bienniums. Line 146, Board of Teaching, this provides money for the Board of Teaching to pursue certifying teachers, or providing teachers with certificates of advanced study to allow them to teach in different subject matter areas. Line 147, Board of Administrators, again, this is a across-the-board increase of $9,000 for the biennium, $12,000 for the second biennium. Purpose operating increase, the only increase there is $299,000 in operating funds in the first biennium, $400,000 in the second biennium. Line 170 is the Faribault Academies for the Deaf and Blind. That's an operating increase of $546,000 and $730,000 in the second biennium. Additionally, as we heard in their testimony, they are seeking enhanced technological offerings. This is Senator Jensen's proposal and also the governor's proposal, and this makes it part of the base, but similar to resetting the base, walks down the proposal in the out fiscal years. The last two things I'd like to talk about is line 177. You'll see that's the less prior year cancellation. That has to do with the IT certification. So in column O, we save $300, or the chair saves $300 from the proposal, bringing the total amount for the fiscal 16-17 biennium to $361,220,000. In the second year or second biennium, that's $709,582,000 projected. Finally, line 205. This is the spending authority for teaching licensure fees. This is from the BCA regarding the criminal background checks. This is $80,000 in one-time spending authority in fiscal 16.
Thank you, Mr. Wilms. Any questions, members? Senator Pratt.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I had a question on the department's budget. I notice it goes up, $6.3 million between 14 and 15, but then we seem to have an ongoing savings of $5 million a year on the bottom line. And when you look at the net for forecast 16-17, we've got about a $2.6 million savings, and then we expect a even with the additional spending, a $700,000 savings. I was wondering if somebody from the department or Mr. Wilms could explain. This is the first I've heard the department of offering any sort of efficiencies.
Senator Pratt, are you looking at a certain line in the spreadsheet?
Sure, I'm looking at lines 138 through 163.
Okay, the whole thing. Mr. Wilms, do you have a comment?
Mr. Chair and committee.
Or answer to his question.
Yeah. Madam Chair and Senator Pratt, within the agency's budget, line 138, prior year funds are allowed to be carried through to the following fiscal year. So the February 15 amount might seem higher than what's projected, but if you look at the biennial total, it should be similar. Additionally, some savings is represented in one-time programs. For instance, in fiscal 15, line 158, 159, there are one-time inventories required of the department, and those do not become part of the agency's base, but then fall off. And so the agency's base budget continues at approximately the same amount. However, the one-time money is not included.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions, members? If not, we have 27 people listed to speak, to comment today. Senator Wieger suggested that we have a four-minute time for each person to come forward. So we'll start that way and see how it goes. And Mr. Walseth, you're the first one on the list from the Minnesota Rural Education Association.
Madam Chair, members, thank you. I think I can beat 4 minutes.
That's wonderful.
I'll do my best. I'm Sam Walseth, Director of Legislative Action for the Minnesota Rural Education Association. I sat before you in January, and on behalf of the 200 school districts I represent, I testified that our top priority this session is to close one of the largest fiscal inequities that exist between two halves of the state student body. One half of the student body who attends school in one of the largest 25 districts, those districts who have fiscal tools at their disposal for deferred maintenance needs and spend an average of $2.79 per square foot on deferred maintenance, and the other half of the student body who attends school in one of the 300 or so medium and small-sized school districts who lack the same fiscal tools and struggle to maintain facilities and spend only an average of 58 cents per square foot on deferred maintenance. MRE asked this committee to address this inequity by focusing on recommendation number one of the MDE Facility Task Force report, which was brought to you in the form of Senate File 76 by Senator Dahl. We also asked you to consider the problems associated with trying to equalize this program on adjusted net tax capacity, in other words, districts with high-valued farmland. And Madam Chair and members, today your bill delivers on both those issues. Thank you. If this proposal becomes law, it will improve the general fund purchasing power that's meant for educational programs for over 300 districts by dramatically reducing the cross-subsidizing of facility needs against the academic needs of rural students. It will improve the educational settings for hundreds of thousands of children and their teachers. It will create quality construction trades work in rural communities. It will help these communities to maximize the life expectancy of their existing facilities. And last but not least, it will treat rural students fair by allowing their locally elected school boards to exercise some basic fiduciary responsibilities. This is the most significant, important proposal we see from rural education in the bill today. We'll be with you through this process, through the conference, and through to fruition. But thank you so much for the work you've done on this. This means a lot to greater Minnesota school districts. There are many other important provisions in the bill, too. Concurrent enrollment funding, taking the cap off of QComp, Indian education funding, experiential learning pilot, regional career and technical education office, transportation sparsity fix, telecom equity access, and using school readiness to expand early learning opportunities. We're here to work with you on the rest of these proposals as well, but thank you so much for your work on long-term maintenance. We really appreciate your work. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Walseth, and I would hope that each of the testifiers comes forward in the same motion that you're providing. Appreciate it. Thank you very much. Karen Schwab, and you were below the 4 minutes.
I plan to follow suit. Good morning, Senator Johnson and committee members. My name is Karen Schaub. I'm the Director of Community Education for the Roseville Area Schools. I'm here today on behalf of Minnesota Community Education Association. I want to thank you, Senators, for your recognition of a long-standing state program, School Readiness, which is in its 24th year in the state of Minnesota. School Readiness has been a wonderful vehicle to deliver high-quality, school-based, universal pre-K learning that is not only targeted, but it's also available to all families in Minnesota. School Readiness continues to be a good statute that has been part of the state's educational policy since 1991. School Readiness provides programs for 3- and 4-year-olds. It's universal. It's in all school districts. It's targeted at our at-risk learners, which we know we want to support continually. It provides comprehensive programming that aligns with the state early childhood learning standards. It provides sliding fee scales for those who cannot afford to pay. So once again, we're looking at our most at-risk kids. It involves parents in our program planning and decision-making. Last year, School Readiness Program served over 28,000 learners in Minnesota. And best of all, the program works. Many districts report great learning gains. I know we have in Roseville for our at-risk learners, no matter whether they have come from homes that don't have a lot of money, food, and some of our homes where our students show up with no English. We're seeing great responses in our kids. One of the aspects of school readiness history in Minnesota is that while it's a very solid policy, it has been underfunded for nearly 23 years. Last year was the first year you were able to give us a little bit of an increase, and we thank you again for thinking about our youngest learners. School-based early learning programs have a track record of employing high-quality and trained staff that work collaboratively with families and also work within our communities to support other child care providers and preschool programs. This Senate proposal to increase funding will allow Minnesota school districts to increase the intensity services of our 3- and 4-year-olds, as well as expand to a number of new students being served. Minnesota school-based early learning programs are accountable and capable, and with the appropriate funding provided in this proposal, they will provide Minnesota with an excellent delivery system to help close the achievement gap and opportunity gap before kindergarten, to serve all learners and prepare them for a successful life in school. Thank you for your time, and thank you so much for your support.
Thank you, Ms. Schaub. Appreciate your comments. Commissioner Caselius.
Madam Chair, members, thank you again for having me. I've had many opportunities to speak to the needs of Minnesota children in front of this committee, and I appreciate you giving me the opportunity. I understand I have 4 minutes, and there's a lot that we need to talk about over the next 4 weeks, but I'll be brief in my comments. Specifically, I just want to remind everyone that we can't let up now. The past 4 years, we've righted the ship as a legislature and with the governor's leadership. Why would we take the wind out of the sails now of achievement and when we have a gust blowing at our backs with a $2 billion surplus? And we can make accelerated progress to our destination, which is a 90% graduation rate for all our kids, no student group under 85%, and closing achievement gaps by 50%. That's what's before us, trying to really do something remarkable for our kids. We have this opportunity. Our students only get one chance. And if we save money or we give back checks, all those kids don't get the resources. They have these 13 years. That's what they have. And we're saying maybe it takes 14. And so let me speak to a few things specific in the bill that I wanted to highlight for you. First is the overall increase. You know, we've discussed this in a couple of committees about the 1%. I appreciate that you are matching the governor's 1% on the formula. All of us know that that is not enough. We've heard from our superintendents, so that's why yesterday the governor talked about let's try to move toward that 1.5% for our school districts. In addition, we all know early learning matters. It is absolutely a game changer for our kids and a game changer for our teachers so that they don't play catch-up over the years with students who come already behind. And so I appreciate that you are working toward more early learning, a $70 million commitment in early learning. I think we can work out the details of that. I appreciate that you put in $5 million for scholarships. The governor has said this isn't an if or, this is an and. He has a comprehensive approach to a mixed delivery system in his proposal. What is concerning, however, is that there is $0 for Head Start. We know that those are our poorest kids, and there is silence on those 4,000 Head Start kids that are waiting right now. We have $1,000 in there for scholarships, and we have $10 million in there for school readiness. We originally had $10 million, and now we're adding $70 million to school readiness, which is a lot of that's a fee-based program that's not accessible to our targeted kids. So let's look at Head Start. Let's get those kids off the waiting list. Then the closing of achievement gaps. We know that students need to master English in order to be able to move through our schools and be effective. So we've been striving for fully funding what the research says, 7 years for kids to master English. And even if they do master English, we want them to be able to take advantage of the concurrent enrollment investments you've put in place and have the supports for that. So let's support our EL kids. Reading Corps, we know and have demonstrated evidence that Reading Corps, so thank you for your investment in Reading Corps. Special education kids with disabilities, no money in there. And the governor has said every funding year we need to continue to invest. That buys down the cross subsidy and also provides additional general ed funding for all students when we buy down the cross subsidy. Thank you for those 860 kids who are going to get help in our BIE schools. Boy, do they need it. But so do the other 19,000 Indian students in our 138 schools in rural Minnesota, where they absolutely need that help. Students need help with their struggling behavior with PBIS. They need help with food insecurity. We're able to move to grade one, but we aren't able to do more for our kids with food security. And there's $0 additional dollars to expand out our statewide system of support for our lowest 5% of schools that are struggling with their overall performance and the 10% of schools that have the greatest achievement gaps. We need these investments in order to move the achievement gap. We must get a bigger target for our K-12 investments in a $2 billion surplus. I want to speak to just two more things very briefly. One is the teacher workforce. I know our rural superintendents and all of you are hearing about the teacher workforce. Instead of investing in policy things that aren't going to make a difference for teacher quality, let's invest in the governor's teacher workforce proposal. I commend you on your QComp proposal to be able to give those professional dollars for QComp and finally create an equitable system for teachers across the state in equalizing QComp. And then your Q investments for teachers of color. We know that teachers of color is about 3% out of our teachers, so stepping up your investments in Q are good. I noticed that you have a lot of programs in your budget that I think are mostly addressed toward innovation and closing achievement gaps. I urge you to pull those into a larger granting program where there's a clear alignment to their world's best workforce plan, clear outcomes that are expected, and accountability. So then there's a competitive and transparent process that's moving forward so people know how those programs were funded, that there's a clear and transparent process for that, for accountability. And just finally, we've done a lot of work around facilities, and we know that this is a big-ticket item. There's more work to do, but it's a great start on your facilities. And in closing, the governor and I look forward to working with you over the next several weeks, so at the end of this legislative session, we can have a bill that truly addresses achievement gaps and the needs of our kids, as well as one that we can all be proud of. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner, and you've certainly given us some challenges to look at and appreciate that, and we still have another month at least. Thank you. Mr. Brizendine.
Hello, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Steve Brizendine, Director of Community Education and Recreation for Willmar Public Schools in the City of Willmar. Thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of the school readiness, early learning programs, and the priority that you are making in front of this great state of Minnesota. I'm actually a little bit humbled to address this Senate committee whose membership believes that making this monumental investment in our youngest learners is the right thing for our communities this year. Willmar and districts across the state, from Duluth to Laverne, Moorhead to Rochester, as well as the entire metropolitan areas of Minneapolis and St. Paul, stand poised to serve our neediest students in this school-based early learning initiatives. When this historic investment becomes law, our 3- and 4-year-old children in this state will benefit from the excellent opportunities provided by school readiness programs and school districts across the state for the coming years. The state of Minnesota will benefit for generations, given the data that supports investing in our youngest learners. The successes we have seen across the state with the current investments and now with this unprecedented support for 3- and 4-year-olds will certainly assist districts as we close the achievement and opportunity gaps that currently exist. Again, I'd like to thank you for entrusting districts like Willmar with this awesome opportunity and responsibility of educating our youngest learners. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brizendine. Brad Lundell, Schools for Equity in Education. I will tell the chair that we have had some very fine comments on our regard to the bill as it is standing.
Madam Chair, I hope I can keep up the tradition of fine comments. Brad Lundell with Schools for Equity in Education, and I want to thank this committee for all the hard work that has put in this year. I think sharing with MREA, we look in this year at some of the gaps that exist in funding throughout the state, and I think in facilities, you've addressed that with facilities. You've also addressed that with taking the cap off the alternative compensation. I think those are two really noticeable gaps that exist amongst districts, and we really, really do appreciate you looking at those programs. Also, the thing with the equalization of the facilities issue is also the property tax equalization piece is extremely important. Also things, you know, with the early childhood, we really support the school-based approach, and we think that the school-based approach that you've taken here and the considerable investment that you've made are very, very important, and again, we support that. Things like career and tech, concurrent enrollment, those types of things, I think, again, are things that are going to help create greater opportunities for students throughout the state, create that kind of equity of regardless of where your zip code that I think needs to be in place in Minnesota to meet that constitutional requirement. I'd also want to add, as I do legislative work for the school psychologists and for the school social workers, and we've been working along with the school counselors and the school nurses this year with Senator Kent, and we're glad to see that her grant program is funded in the bill, because I think it's very important. Again, it's another equity issue. Some districts have access to those student support services, some don't. We just think that this is going to be a very good program to really create more student support personnel throughout the state. In closing, I just would like to say that I think the real issue this year is when we look at gaps versus raising all boats. And I think that the target that you've set really gave you an either or. You either address gaps or you raise all boats. And you've raised all boats to some extent with 1% on the formula. But if you were at a higher level with your target and you would put that target, the difference between, say, you and the governor's target, if we were to move in that direction toward a higher target with those dollars going toward the general ed formula, and you would have a both-and situation, that you were addressing both the gaps and the raising all boats that needs to be in place. And I think that if you do that, and as we move forward and as we move toward these last 4 weeks and hopefully getting a higher target, I think that we can get to that both-and situation. And I think if that's the case, I think that this could indeed be the way that you've distributed the, you know, again, taking dollars toward the formula, leaving the rest of the distribution in place, you would have a bill for the ages here. You'd have one of the best bills that I've seen in the 40 years I've been here. So with that, those comments, I just would say, if not now, again, as the commissioner said, if we can't do this now, when couldn't we do it? And I think it's very, very important that we do, as we move forward, look at the places that are left unaddressed, and I think the general ed formula is the place that additional dollars should go moving forward. So, again, thank you very much. It's been a very open process. You know, feel free to count on me for anything that I can offer as you move forward. Thank you.
Mr. Lundell, thank you. And you have good support with the commissioner saying we should have a raised target also. Josh Donham.
I'd invite testifiers to join them too.
Okay. Senator Wieger suggests that maybe the next two people on the agenda come up to the table at the same time.
Rotate
in and out. Mr. Donham. So if we would have Melissa Sweet Milk and Jane Behrens, superintendent, come up to the table, please.
Wonderful. Madam Chair, members, Josh Downham. I'm going to represent both clients so we can do this quickly. First of all, I wanted to thank the committee, Senator Kent, Senator Wieger, for the increase in the Reading Corps funding. That is absolutely helpful for the schools that are requesting Reading Corps. We had over 1,600 member requests from schools and pre-K centers this year for the coming school year, and this will help move us in the right direction. And would love to see the base continue to grow for that. So thank you, members. That will really help us move in the right direction. I also represent Minneapolis Public Schools, as you know, and we want to, again, thank the committee for their hard work, particularly around school readiness. The students that go through our High Five program, our four-year-old program, those students, American Indian students who are then go on to kindergarten, are 84% of those students are ready for K if they go through our school readiness program. If they do not go through our program, 38% are ready. And that those kind of differences are across the board for all our racial ethnic groups. School readiness works. It closes the gaps. So thank you for that investment. Mr. Walseth may cringe when I say this, but we also support the facilities aid and changes, despite the fact that Minneapolis actually does not get new money from this. As you know, Mark Bollinger, our facilities director, was one of the co-directors of that, and so we strongly support that. We feel that we know what it's like to have many old buildings and the needs to maintain those, and so we do support those dollars statewide. And then I would just echo the commissioner's comments that we would love to see more resources in special education and on the formula, and hope that this committee and the House work with the governor to raise the target beyond where you are today. So thank you. Appreciate your hard work.
Thank you, Mr. Donovan. We appreciate your suggestions for the future. Ms. Sweet Milk.
Good morning. All members of the committee, and my name is Melissa Sweetmilk. I'm a director at Metro Deaf School in St. Paul, Minnesota. We are a charter school, and we serve deaf and hard of hearing students in the metro area as well as western Wisconsin. So we are a pre-K through 12th grade program. I came with a parent prior to this committee. Last month, I came with another parent. Her name was Jenna King, and we came to address some policies with some issues for student enrollment in the pre-K level with our early childhood special ed program. Because we are a charter school, we are also 100% special education, which provides us with a challenge, because while we follow the early special ed laws for our children to start earlier, but also charter school laws restrict us to provide those services to students age 5 and below, unless they are placed by the parent. for them to select appropriate programming for their child. We feel that it is the best fit for their child, as well as deaf education is not a one-size-fits-all approach. There are various options and opportunities within that. So I'm coming before the committee to share our concerns. One, that there's a conflict in the policy, and we do appreciate your support and the addition of our language in your bill, and that will allow for us to address that issue. And it gives an opportunity for our children and families to have language acquisition before the age of five, not waiting until later or until it is too late. So it provides success for their future, as well as our future leaders in our field. I see several of our students growing up and becoming a part of society and the community and contributing as a successful individual and becoming future leaders. So I want to thank you for your support today.
Thank you, Ms. Sweet Milk. Superintendent Behrens, Rosemont Apple Valley.
Thank you. Yes, Chair Wieger and committee members, thank you for the opportunity to speak today about Senate File 811. My name is Jane Behrens, and I am the superintendent of the Rosemont Apple Valley Eagan School District. As the fourth largest district in the state, District 196 serves more than 27,000 students in nine different communities in the South Metro. First, I'd like to thank you for the funding we received in the last biennium and for the addition of full-day kindergarten. The full-day kindergarten program relieved our parents of the fiscal burden of tuition for that second half of their kindergartner's day, and it's been fabulously successful. We have two children who do not have all-day kindergarten of our 2,000 kindergartners. Since I became superintendent in 2009, public schools have received 2 years of zero increase on the formula, 2 years of 1%, then 1.5%, and 2% in the last 2 years. So with the exception of the last year, these have all been less than inflationary increases to the formula. Like many other public schools, we're no different throughout the state. This lack of even an inflationary increase required our district to implement budget cuts and request additional referendum from the support of our community. In fiscal years 2011, 2012, and 2013, District 196 implemented nearly $34 million of budget adjustments through frozen salary schedules, increased class sizes due to reductions in teaching staff, reductions to support staff and transportation services, elimination of certain programs, and increased user fees for all of our parents. Through these actions, an operating referendum, our community approved in 2013, we currently have a modest 10% fund balance. So we've not been able to bring back any of the services that we cut of that $34 million, and we have not had the opportunity to introduce the new programming that we'd like for our students. But I am proud to say that District 196 students continue to excel at high levels in academics, the arts, and athletics. We are asking more and more of our families, however, to provide the resources necessary to make these opportunities possible, which also means that some students are unable to participate in experiences that make up a well-rounded education. I am asking that you support at least a 2% increase to the general education formula so District 196 and others can continue to provide our communities with consistent and sustainable education services. If increases of 1% or less per year on the general ed formula are approved, District 196 could face budget cuts of nearly $20 million over the next 3 years. A $20 million cut spread proportionally would eliminate approximately 225 full-time employees. Of that, 125 would be teachers. Our employee groups have accepted pay freezes, we have cut our budget, parents are paying more, and our community has recently supported us with an operating referendum. We truly feel we are doing our part, and we ask that you consider providing school districts with an additional 2% increase, both years on the biennium. Thank you for the opportunity to present to all of you.
Thank you, Ms. Behrens. And if we could have the next three people, Mr. McCready, Heidi Hulster and Peggy Flanagan, come forward. And then after you testify, if you would move back to your place and let the next person on the agenda come in. Thank you very much. Mr. McCready.
Good morning. Chair Wieger, members of the Senate, I am Charles McCready. My wife and I are residents of Apple Valley and parents of a fourth grader and a seventh grader. Thank you for the opportunity to speak, but my comments are brief. I'm in support of increased funding for E-12 education at real inflation levels to maintain and grow excellence in education and well beyond. Why? Funding at less than rising costs produces cuts in core education. You just heard Superintendent Barron outline that. Programs that have lasting effects on our children. The admin costs in District 196 reflect a very efficient organization.
Put that person,
geez. So when there are cuts, where will they be? They'll be at the heart of our children's education, teachers, class size, programs. That's why I enthusiastically support full funding of education through effective school districts like 196, rather than many top-down driven programs and underfunded costs. From a parent volunteer perspective, our experiences in the district are numerous. Since we retired, we have the opportunity to volunteer in many, many ways. What enjoyment. Children are the pulse of our future. However, we also had the opportunity to be involved in a monumental effort to get a district levy passed in 2013, a levy that was truly necessary to stop the bleeding from cuts to core programs. Yes, the levy was successful, but at no small cost to prepare, to communicate, to fund polling, and the mega hours of volunteers to make the thing happen. Statewide funding in Minnesota public schools, as I understand it, was undertaken to ensure greater access to quality education for all Minnesotans. I also understand that local levies benefit wealthier, tax revenue-rich communities. I believe that can undermine the spirit of equal education. A commitment was made many years ago to make Minnesota public education a model to follow. That proved to be a true vision. In the not-too-distant past, changes in policy, as well as more recent financial issues, weakened that vision. We believe it is time to return to the commitment to our children's education and future opportunities and the future of our state by fully funding education through effective school districts going forward. Thank you for listening and for your consideration. I appreciate the opportunity to express our point of view as citizens and parents of deserving students. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McCready. Ms. Holster?
Good morning, Chair Wieger, committee. My name is Heidi Hilster. I'm with Parents United for Public Schools. First of all, we want to thank you. We appreciate the position you took with many programs like school readiness, scholarships, school breakfast, concurrent enrollment, community support services, just to name a few. 1% is better than 0.6, if I have to be optimistic today, but a 1% increase to the formula is the only part of this budget that affects every student, and parents are incredibly disappointed. This will continue to keep schools hanging by their fingernails, and most schools will see major cuts. That's a fail for our students, that's a fail for our teachers, that's a fail for our families and our communities, and it's not good enough. And we hope that you continue to fight for at least that target amount in conference committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Holster. And Ms. Flanagan, and then, the next group, there's about five people listed, if you're ready to come up then.
Ready.
Okay. Ms. Flanagan.
Good morning, Chair Wieger, members of the committee. My name is Jessica Anderson, here on behalf of Peggy Flanagan at Children's Defense Fund. She's our executive director. I'm our legislative affairs director. Thank you for allowing me to testify today. We're pleased to see, of course, this committee's commitment to children through a number of proposals in this bill. But I do want to say that we are concerned that this bill does not contain Senator Claussen's proposal to improve outcomes for young homeless children. I won't go into great detail since his bill was just heard last week, so you're well-versed in it, but he had a bill that would extend Part C early intervention services to young homeless children. Homeless infants and toddlers are at four times the risk of developmental delay, and they often experience a delay in more than one area. We also know that Part C services are effective at addressing those delays. This bill was supported by our organization, by the Family Housing Fund, by People Serving People. It was also a recommendation of Minneapolis Mayor Betsy Hodges' Cradle to K cabinet. And we at CDF feel that by not including this proposal, we have missed an opportunity to do right by this population of this small but vulnerable population of young children. So we look forward to continuing to work with this committee in the future, and thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Anderson. And next we have the group from Stillwater School District.
That's correct. share our perspective and our experience.
You'd go to the microphone.
Could you speak into the mic, please?
Helene Anderson, a parent in the Stillwater School District, will be our first speaker. Thank you.
Helene Anderson.
Madam Chair and committee members, I'm a Marine parent. I have two boys in the Marine Elementary School, grades 3 and 4. The students of Minnesota urgently need your help. Please support a further increase to the basic general education formula to help restore adequate school funding statewide. With the current surplus, the current proposals come up short with education funding. Although this is a district and statewide need, I can tell you only our school situation to illustrate this real need. Once again, District 834, like many others, is facing a severe operational budget cut that will negatively impact the quality of education of our students. As you may know, Marine Elementary is a small school in the northern part of the Stillwater School District. Last year, because of operational deficits, our budget was cut by about $72,000. We lost some essential services like math intervention and instructional coaching, and other services were reduced. Nevertheless, we tried to be the little school that could, and we are now ranked number 2 in the state based on test scores and are nationally recognized. Unfortunately, this year, a Marine teacher has been cut. The administration is recommending that we go to a multi-grade classroom, replacing our trained teacher with paraprofessionals. With only one teacher per grade, this is devastating to our small school with the increasing rigorous state standards. In the scheme of things, Marine's problems aren't huge. This story is similar, and similar ones are repeating themselves in many communities and districts across the state. But the cuts are not to fat, they are to necessities. A 1% increase to the general formula doesn't keep up with inflation and will result in further widespread teacher cuts, increased class sizes, less technology, larger achievement gaps, and additional operating levy referendums. Thank you for your support.
Thank you, Ms. Anderson. And go ahead and introduce yourselves, whoever you are.
Yes, Mike Potashik, a school board member of 8 years, will start with the school, the Stillwater Talking Points.
Senators, many of you are acquainted with the old adage, hope for the best, plan for the worst. Unfortunately, I have to start with planning for the worst. Preparation for the 2015-16 school year, the Stillwater Area School District has reduced our budget by $2.5 million. This includes a reduction in health insurance benefits to maintain the current rate, a reduction in special education positions, a reduction in nursing positions, moving to a multi-grade classroom model to save the cost of 6 to 7 teaching positions, reductions in technology, staffing to assist at the building level, reduction in services at our alternative learning center, a major reduction between $400,000 and $500,000 at the district office. 2 cabinet positions are eliminated, and over a $200,000 reduction in curriculum materials to support the classroom. This is on top of a reduction in staffing positions last year that increased class sizes across the district, an increase of 1%, unfortunately, in each of the formula will not come close to closing the gap on those reductions.
Next, Paula O'Loughlin, a first-year school board member.
Good morning.
Ms.
Thank
Laughlin.
You for the opportunity to be here and speak before you this morning. As a school board member, I'm here representing hundreds and hundreds of parents in our community, but more importantly, the over 8,000 students that I have the honor and privilege of representing. And we have parents in our community who believe deeply and support public education, but they're growing increasingly disheartened at the lack of funding that has kept up with basic inflation. Unfortunately, we've been asked, and districts across the state have been asked, to do more with less, and that simply is just not possible. We're seeing the impacts right now in our classroom and across the districts in the state that our students are feeling the impacts and the ramifications of being asked to do less with less. So we are advocating for an increase on the basic formula of 3% to help mitigate and ameliorate some of the cuts, the very deep cuts into the marrow of our schools that have already taken place. We believe with the surplus as it stands right now, this is the opportune time to, as Commissioner said, move forward with that momentum to not only expand opportunities for all of our students, but to give them the services and the support that each one of our kids needs to achieve. Thank you.
Thank you. And then lastly, my name is Kathy Buchholz. I'm a 10-year school board member, and I want to end on a very positive note. We, as an entire board, strongly support the continuation of the QComp funding. We believe that all qualifying districts should have access, and it is the fair and right thing to do. And I want to thank Senator Kent and Senator Housley and Senator Stumpf for making sure that this is part of the bill. And we encourage you to keep this as part of the bill because it's the right thing to do for our teachers and all school districts. So lastly, we want to close with a parent, Kirk Hillquist, who is a Lake Elmo parent. Thank you, Kirk.
Mr. Hillquist.
Madam Chair, board members, thank you very much. I brought along, this is Caden. This is my son. He's 9. He's a fourth grader at Lake Elmo Elementary. Looks like a pretty decent kid, and he is a pretty decent kid. But Caden suffers from, he would be glad to hear that. Thank you. He suffers from autism spectrum disorder, PDD, NOS, sensory integration, a few other acronyms that he was given at a young age that people use to describe our son. And what we are asking for, as well as you've heard from other people, is an increase in the general formula to avoid the cuts that they're looking at imposing on Lake Elmo and some of the other schools. I speak on behalf of ourselves. Obviously, this impacts 100% of our life, and it also impacts 100% of a lot of the lives of people that have medical and mental special needs with their children. So even with current funding, we were at a school that did not have adequate staff to handle our son. That led to some mistreatment of him in the building and in the general society of the classroom and other common areas. Lake Elmo has excellent staff, and what we've seen is our son grow from a boy who was shunned and was mistreated and was picked on to becoming a child who, through the special services and resources at Lake Elmo, has become a wonderful, wonderful part of the Lake Elmo Society, to the point that he's thriving in the classroom. He's helping other special needs kids by teaching them math, wheeling kids around in wheelchairs, and helping them out. Mm-hmm. So he's gone from a boy who was feeling very put down and hurt on a daily basis to somebody who's thriving as part of a society that embraces those special needs. So please, please, I urge you, on behalf of all special needs parents, please increase the formula to help with these funds and prevent them from being cut further. Thank you very much for your service. Thank you very much.
Thank you to all of you for being here, taking the time, showing your passion for what I believe is our passion, too. Your support is very important, and that's the reason you're here. We appreciate hearing from you.
Thank you very much.
So next we have Deb Moses, Denise Dietrich, and Gary Amoroso.
Madam Chair, members, I am the Head Start Director for Ramsey County Head Starts, and I am on the board of the Minnesota Head Start Association. I understand that you have a very difficult task in making budget decisions and setting priorities. We at Head Start appreciate the state funding we receive that allows us to serve more children than would with just our federal funds. I am, however, here to give testimony as to why I believe you should reevaluate the decision to not fund the Head Start waiting list. One of the largest concerns facing our state is educational disparities. Head Start has 50 years of experience serving the families and children facing these disparities and doing so in a high-quality, comprehensive manner, which includes family services, health and mental health services, nutrition services, and high-quality education. Developed to meet the needs of the children we serve within a highly educated workforce that is also representative of our families. We have parents in the audience right now, past and present, some of who have become our staff at this time. Two of our Head Start parents who are working for us right now and are here are actually working on their PhDs in educational policy. And I'm sure we'll go on to make a big difference in our state as we move forward with these discussions. Head Start works, and we have the outcomes to show it. Statewide, Head Start gets 88% of its children ready for school. We also know a lot about the remaining 12% who are not ready because we're not willing to rest on our laurels. I do not believe any other early childhood program can make the same claims. Ramsey County's Head Start replicates these numbers with a population of children and families that speak over 30 languages and are facing extreme urban poverty. Recently, you've heard a lot about the outcomes of the Promised Neighborhood, that it's working, and it certainly is. We work well with the Promised Neighborhood, but what isn't often said is the outcomes from the St. Paul Promised Neighborhood in early childhood are Head Start outcomes. The majority of the children that have been evaluated and served have been served in our Head Start centers as well as in collaborative Head Start classrooms at Wilder and at LifeTrack. New Americans we serve from the Karen, Latino, Hmong, Somali, and many other communities, along with our established African American and American Indian communities, have come to Head Start because they choose Head Start. The 600 children in Ramsey County alone who are sitting on the waiting list, along with the 4,000 statewide, have chosen Head Start. Almost daily, I receive calls of parents who are either crying or yelling because they have to wait for Head Start. Those parents have chosen Head Start. No child should have to wait for Head Start, and you have the ability to make funding decisions that will ensure that happens and that more children receive the comprehensive services they deserve.
Thank you, Ms. Moses. And I want to say that, of course, we know that the commissioner is very much in support of this, and your comments are coming forward to try to influence us here in the room and also outside of this room. So thank you for your comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Ms. Diedrich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Denise Diedrich, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota School Boards Association. As we have mentioned before, we represent over 2,000 school board members across the state. And they want to thank you for all your work on behalf of the 850,000 children in the state of Minnesota. We understand that each one of you does this because of your passion for public education. And so we want to thank you. I want to start out by saying that you did a lot with a little in this bill. And you actually touched on quite a few of the issues in the 2015 legislative platform. So I'd like to just mention a couple of those. And that would be the addressing the deferred maintenance needs across the state. That was important to our members. Concurrent enrollment funding. The QCOMP equity piece is also important. And then many smaller provisions that address technology for in our state. And then we also want to say thank you for, in your look at early education, of choosing school readiness. We know that school-based programs are effective, and they feed into a system that is already in place. But with that, I just must say on the school readiness piece that we would appreciate as much flexibility as possible in implementing it. The way that it is, the language is now, it's really a mandate. And we don't believe that this should be mandated without the local school district assessing what is my facility availability, who are the number of students who actually want to attend in the short term versus the long term, and then the requirement of specific hours year-round can be problematic and make it much more of an inefficient use of our dollars versus maximizing the use of dollars. So the other piece on that would be the requirements on licensure. We all know that we've had a lot of talk about teacher shortage, and early education is one of those places that we are experiencing a teacher shortage, and so we would also ask for flexibility on that as well. But Madam Chairman, the most important thing that I want to address here today is the target and the per pupil formula funding. You know that I have addressed that many times in front of this committee, but I think it is the number one priority for school board members across the state, so it needs to be addressed again. With a $1.2 billion surplus and a $361 million target, we understand the challenge. Actually, it's almost kind of sad that that you got a target of 361 with a $1.2 billion surplus. But what you did with the $361 million target is you spent almost half of it on the per-pupil formula, or the basic education formula, $58 the first year, $59 the second year. That is a 1% increase each year of the biennium, and we all know that that is less than inflation. And it comes off of a 10-year history, 13-year history of less than inflation increases on the formula. So we would strongly encourage you to continue to look at it, how can we get that number to 3% to ensure that at least in a surplus year, a $1.2 billion surplus, that our schools are at least able to maintain their class size and the programs that they already offer to students. And with that, I would just like to mention, members of the committee, we have asked our members of what would a 1% increase on the formula look like in your school district. And we have lots of people who have already started to respond. And I just feel the need to characterize some of the responses for those who would have to cut with a 1% increase on the formula. Their cuts are falling into about four different areas. There are four different themes. First of all, is the first thing that they talk about that they would need to be doing is raising class size. And the class sizes are going to be, make no mistake about it, you know, high 30s and 40s. The other thing that they are talking about is deferred maintenance, that a lot of the projects that they want to do will have to be deferred, so the deferred maintenance part of your bill is appreciated and very strong response when we polled school districts. And the other thing that is really important that they have said that they are going to need to be cutting, they're going to have to delay implementation of their technology plans. Many of them have hopes and dreams of going to a one-to-one program in their school district, and they are going to have to delay that program. And I think the thing that breaks my heart the most is that they will have to eliminate effective programs in their schools. And those are the programs that all of us go tour schools and we say, this is wonderful that you're doing this. And then we turn around and a 1% increase mm-hmm. would require reduction in some of those programs. And let me just list some of those.
Ms. Diedrich, if you could wind up in the next few minutes, seconds.
Well, I would like to just mention a couple of those programs because these are the programs that we're all familiar with and we love to say that we love. Reducing foreign language, eliminating RTI in the district, eliminating reading recovery programs, reducing music, art, FIED, industrial technology, marching band, the list just goes on and on, but I just wanted to make sure that I touched on some of those things. So with that, Madam Chair, we stand here ready to help you in any way that we possibly can to get a higher target and to put more money on the basic formula. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dietrich. Mr. Amoroso.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Gary Amoroso, Executive Director, Minnesota Association of School Administrators. And I'd like to thank the committee for the work that they've done over the last 3-plus months. We've had some great hearings, some great conversations. From the perspective of our association, we're thankful that the deferred maintenance needs are beginning to be addressed in your bill. The concurrent enrollment provision is something that we're very pleased with, seeing some additional dollars provided for QComp, dollars for school readiness, as well as additional dollars in the area of technology. So these are all things that we're very pleased with, and know that each of you had a very challenging task, and especially the chair, in taking the target of $361.5 million and trying to address these needs. But you've been able to put dollars into a number of programs, which I do think will provide benefits to our school districts and to our students. So for that, we're very thankful. But as you've heard, there's an elephant in the room, and that elephant is the formula. And in order to really address the formula without having a negative impact on the other programs that you're looking at funding, which we believe in, we need to have the governor's target to be established. We need to have each of you work with our members, with the rest of the state, to try and have a new target established when you proceed with this bill into your conference committees. A new target of approximately $700 million, which is where the governor is at, would provide you the opportunity to maintain all of the programming, all of the new initiatives, all of the investments that you're making in this bill And with those additional dollars, you could get to that 3% level on the formula for each of the next 2 years.
I hope so.
So it is very doable to do the 3% on the formula, as well as all of the initiatives that you have in this bill. It's there. But the challenge, of course, is getting us to that target level. And that's something that I pledge our members are working hard on, and I'm hoping that all of you would work hard on. In essence, the formula is the gasoline that runs the engine. It would be a shame that if a bill of this nature was passed and all of these new programs were introduced and all of the additional dollars were provided to our schools in the areas of facilities and QCOMP and school readiness, it would be a shame if a significant number of districts had to reduce staff and reduce programs in other areas. That's not what we want this session to be. We want this session to be viewed as a session where, with a surplus, the state continued its investment in public education. And so we thank you for your work to date. We know we've got 4-plus weeks left, but we pledge to you to continue to work with our members to send the message to the entire legislature, to continue working with our governor to ensure that we have a higher target, which will enable you to continue to move forward with the programs that you've brought forth, as well as to provide the gasoline that the engine needs to run smoothly. With that, I thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Amoroso. Mr. Kronquist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, Scott Kronquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. And as we're rapidly approaching that point in the hearing where everything's been said, but not everyone has said it, I will try to move quickly.
You're very astute.
I do want to echo, and it's going to be hard to find some new themes here, Madam Chair and members, but we do want to thank you very much for some key provisions. The deferred maintenance is a key one, and there is a perception that generally is for rural school districts, and quite frankly, there are a number of metropolitan school districts that will benefit greatly from that, so we appreciate that very much. Likewise with QCOMP, and thank you, Senator Stump, for your leadership on this. It's critical. As we move forward with teacher development evaluation, we have to have the resources to effectively implement that, so we strongly support that initiative as well. School readiness has been mentioned. When that was first passed in the early 1990s, it was a national model. Other states were looking to Minnesota for what we were doing, and somehow then it dropped off our radar, and we've kind of forgot about it. And so thank you for renewing the commitment to school readiness, it will help us invest in early learning and get all of our students ready for kindergarten. It's absolutely critical to closing the achievement gap, as you all know. So among others, I'm going to stop there in terms of the thank yous. And now just register just a quick concern. And that, of course, is the target.
That's okay.
And as has already been said, and, you know, we know that you each hope for a higher target. I have no doubt that every member of this committee wanted a significantly higher target. And so we need to work towards that. We need the governor's level of funding that he has proposed, and we commend the governor for the target that he established for E-12 education. Just to put a little face to it, we did survey all of our member districts and asked them, under a 1% formula increase, what does it mean for you for next school year? We just looked at the 2015-16 school year. Our 39 districts will be looking at $86 million shortfall, which will result in approaching 500 staff layoffs under a 1% formula increase. So clearly, we need to move beyond that 1%, and we can do that with a higher target. And so we look forward to working with all of you, the governor, the House, in achieving that higher target and wrapping up this session with a fantastic E-12 bill. Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you, Mr. Kronquist, and appreciate your offer of help. And Ms. Burr, if you would please come forward with the people that you have listed. From Stillwater and Anoka Hennepin School Districts. Ms. Burr.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair, committee members. Jody Boer with Education Minnesota on behalf of our 70,000 educators throughout the state. and our students. I'm here with two of our members today who will speak to you in a minute about specific provisions in the bill. I just, on behalf of Education Minnesota and educators and what we try to do for the students, want to say wholeheartedly and echo some of the comments that have been made before, and thank you for the work that you have done, for the investments you have made in this bill for our students, our families, and our communities. I know that you heard me testify about our priorities several times in front of you. We had four main funding priorities this session, which were increases to the formula. Teacher development and evaluation was also one. Pre-K and full-service community schools. And I'd like to say that we appreciate the funding that is included in this bill for those priorities, noting with varying degrees of support, of course, and just say that we look forward, as others have expressed, working with you in the final weeks of this session to also get a higher target so that you can continue the good work that you've started. And we commit ourselves, and our members already have as well, been talking to legislators, the governor, et cetera, to get the higher target, to continue making the investments that I know you care about, we care about, and we are here to help you in any way possible. So thank you for the work you've started. Thank you for the work that you are going to continue doing in the final weeks of the session. And I will now turn it over to our members, starting with Josiah Hill.
Thank you.
Mr. Hill.
Madam Chair, Senator Wieger, members of the committee, my name is Josiah Hill, and I teach in the English department at Stillwater Area High School. I also have the privilege and the pleasure to currently serve as the president of the St. Croix Education Association, our local teachers union. Really appreciate the opportunity to address you here today. And also want to echo our thanks and appreciation for the increase on the funding formula that this bill contains, but also, however, want to echo the sentiment that it's not sufficient for what our teachers need and our districts need to serve our students where they are at. In the district where I currently live and teach, we are now currently seeing the results of the unstable funding increases that have occurred in the past. Class sizes have now become a regular focus at our school board meetings as well as in heated conversations throughout our communities. Also, over the past month, I've witnessed gut-wrenching testimony from parents of medically complex students who are addressing our school board, some you heard from earlier today. Our school board in our district has been put in a position where they've had to alter the level of medical support available for our students in our schools, and this, of course, is because of the previously mentioned revenue challenges. Our district has had to make decisions that have significantly weakened programs that have been in place for over a generation in the service of our students. One example of this has played out over the last year, and I've been saddened to see the level of service provided to students enrolled in our Alternative Learning Center change drastically. The experience of this important and challenging population of students is having today, well, it isn't the same experience that they had even 1 year ago. Due to the current set of realities, the discussions surrounding this program over the past year have rarely focused on the students involved, their specific needs, and the opportunities we used to provide for them. Due to the financial pressures, these conversations have shifted completely away from how we can use such a program and such a structure to focus on creating conditions and systems that are focused on solving important student issues, things like the achievement gap, also known as the opportunity gap. In short, financial realities have made it exceedingly difficult to keep our focus where it belongs, on our students. Also in Stillwater, we've invested a significant amount of time and a great deal of resources to draft and adopt a QCOMP plan over the past year. We've worked collaboratively with our district administration to design a plan that we're proud of. It's a plan that is focused on student achievement through the improved practice and growth for all of our staff members. Our plan has been tirelessly refined and edited with support and input from the dedicated staff at the Minnesota Department of Education. We anticipate its approval in the days ahead. Unfortunately, we will be placed on a waiting list due to lack of funding in the QCOMP program. And this has been a frustrating experience for us as we worked hard to design a plan that more than meets the requirements of this program that has now been in place for more than a decade. As you may know, approximately 50% of all Minnesota students attend districts that are involved in the QCOMP program today. We believe that all districts and all students should have immediate access to inclusion in this program designed to improve learning. While we see there is future funding attached to this program, we are hoping for immediate inclusion for our district and others who are on the waiting list.
If you could conclude your remarks.
To wind down, it's imperative this sufficient funding also be appropriated for our recently implemented TDEP plan, or TD&E, Teacher Development Evaluation. My colleagues and I are seriously concerned that funding in this bill will not accomplish that, and we're hopeful that in the weeks ahead, adequate funding will be a priority. I recognize the challenges before this committee. I'm also well aware of the current realities of our budget, including the $1.9 billion surplus. I can't think of a better moment during the past decade where we have the opportunity to strengthen the historical commitment that this Senate and this state has made to Minnesota's most precious natural resource, our children, our students, who happen to be our future. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hill.
Madam Chair, Chairman Weger, and members of the committee, thank you for allowing me the opportunity to speak with you today. My name is Lemoyne Korgard, and I'm president of Anoka Hennepin Education, Minnesota. I want to thank the committee for investing in our youngest learners. A $70 million investment in school readiness is a step in the right direction. In addition, I'm happy to see the provision requiring those teachers in school readiness programs to be licensed. This will ensure that highly trained and qualified teachers will be teaching our youngest learners in these programs. While I'm happy we're making progress in this effort, with a nearly $2 billion surplus, I would also encourage you to take the governor's proposal to provide universal preschool for all four-year-olds. Universal preschool has shown amazing results, not only in my district, but in schools across the state and country. All kids should have the same opportunity, regardless of where they live or their parents' economic status. As far as the funding formula, I know our board chair, Tom Heidemann, has gone on record in several publications that if we get the 1% being proposed by the governor's budget, he will be looking at eliminating 250 teaching positions in our district alone. That's approximately 10% of our teaching workforce. We need a 3% on the formula over 2 years to avoid this. Our state and its economic future depend on all children being ready to learn and to achieve their full potential. Please do the right thing and fully fund our schools. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Korgard. Thank you, Ms. Burr.
Thank you.
Next, we have Sue Abderholden, Amanda Reineck, and Jim Bartholomew.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota. NAMI's goal when it comes to education is to really help students who live with a mental illness to succeed in school and, frankly, to graduate. And your bill includes two provisions that I think will really move us in the right direction and achieve that goal. The first is the grants to student support personnel. We now have school-linked mental health grants in 645 schools and in 71 counties. But we need to partner with the school support personnel. The school support personnel help identify some of those early warning signs, and they can often help children. And then we have the school-linked grants for when children actually need those clinical services. The second area in the bill that I'd like to thank you for is including some money to reduce the use of seclusion restraints in the schools. Our schools have done a terrific job in bringing those numbers down and in trying to help children by using the data that they now collect. But we do have some children whose needs are very, very complex and goes beyond, you know, frankly, the knowledge and skills that those school personnel have. So being able to have some funding where you can bring in an expert to help you figure out what's going on with that child will really be helpful. So thank you very much for including those two provisions.
Thank you, Ms. Abderholden. Reineck.
Hi. Chair Weger, members of the committee, my name is Amanda Reineck. I'm a preschool teacher in Wayzata Public Schools, the steward for my union, and my children are students in the Buffalo-Hanover-Montrose School District. I'm here representing 8,700 school support staff with SEIU Local 284 to comment on the Senate Omnibus Bill. Our members include custodians, bus drivers, pairs and secretaries, after-school and before-school workers, and early childhood teachers. Thank you all for your work this session to help improve education in our state. This omnibus bill establishes full-service community schools, increases funding for school readiness, and includes long-term facilities maintenance revenue so all of our students can go to school in quality facilities. It even manages to begin to expand breakfast by one grade, something the cafeteria staff in our union feel strongly about. There's much accomplished here within the $350 million target. However, after a decade of drastic cuts to education, funding our districts are still struggling, and we need to make a real reinvestment like we did 2 years ago. With a nearly $2 billion surplus, there's no reason for that to happen. Several members of this committee, both sides of the aisle, proposed 3%, 4%, and 5% this session. That's the kind of investment our districts need. The focus of the session was supposed to be about Greater Minnesota. We are very happy to see facilities included so that districts like Buffalo don't have to go to the voters every time we need a roof repaired. We should also go further to fix the disparities in funding between metro districts. Unfortunately, Senate File 96, Equity for Non-Metro Districts, is not in the bill, even though it's a small, reasonable amount of money to expand metro equity for the 11-county metro. In addition, SF-604 Disparity Aid, which would provide more state funding for the bottom 20% low property wealth districts that are below the average in per pupil funding, this bill would go far in providing better support for schools in Greater Minnesota. I've seen firsthand what happens when we don't invest in education. Without properly funded school districts, we are gambling our children's education on the hope that voters will pick up the tab for our schools. This gamble is something that I find disturbing as both a mother and an educator, and Minnesota students deserve better. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your comments. Mr. Bartholomew.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership. First, we'd like to also thank Senator Wieger and each of you for all your work in putting together the Senate's education funding bill. Second, I'd also like to highlight some of the provisions in Senate File 811 that will help strengthen teaching and school leadership. A couple examples include changes to the QCOMP program. One is the result of Senator Stump's work expanding the number of schools who can participate in QCOMP. The second is Senator Wieger's proposal to allow districts to use QCOMP funds to attract teachers to hard-to-fill areas and hard-to-staff schools. The Teacher-Powered Schools Grant Program is also a great opportunity to give teachers who want the autonomy and responsibility to design and implement instructional strategies that they believe will better meet the needs of their students. While the bill's focus on developing and empowering teachers is critical, Senator Claussen's provision, restoring funding for school leadership development, is also important. As you know, an effective leader is essential in helping to set expectations and working with teachers and others to ensure students succeed. The Principals Academy at the U provides development opportunities on a statewide basis. For students, your proposed increase in funding for concurrent enrollment programs will help expand needed post-secondary opportunities for high school students, and for younger students and their families, your support for the Northside Achievement Zone and the St. Paul Promise neighborhood will help them to continue to make a positive difference for the families they serve. Finally, while we support the substantial increase in funding you're providing for early education services, we'd ask that you consider more of a balance between the increases for school readiness programs and the Parent Aware scholarships. Thank you for the opportunity to highlight some of the strengths in Senate File 811. And again, we'd like to thank you for your time and commitment to Minnesota students.
Thank you, Mr. Bartholomew. Ms. Doslin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Valerie Doslin. I represent the Minnesota Association of School Business Officials. And the Minnesota Association of School Business Officials, or more commonly known as MASBO, are back in districts right now, crunching numbers, trying to find every penny that they can to balance school district budgets and help meet school districts' needs. MASBO appreciates the work that you have done all session and appreciates the very hard task that you have with the target that you've been given. I do want to say, though, MASBO will continue to work with you and the other members in the education world to try to get a higher target. While 1% is certainly better than what we have in the House bill, 1% will not, as you've heard, time again today that 1% will not prevent cuts in school district budget and teacher layoffs. So we will continue to communicate that issue to our members and to have them contact their legislators. We appreciate the task that you have on that. I also just want to highlight a couple of other items. MASBO appreciates and thanks you for the work, Senator Dahl and members of the committee, on the Facilities Task Force. There are a number of business directors on the task force, and the facilities recommendations are a priority for MASBO. And then lastly, thank you, Senator Claussen, for your work on concurrent enrollment. MASBO supports providing additional funding because many districts are paying for concurrent enrollment through their budgets. So thank you for the additional bump in that, and we'll continue to work towards trying to get that amount raised. Thanks for your time.
Mr. Aronson.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Dozlin.
And members, I'm Roger Aronson. I represent the Elementary and the Secondary School Principals Association. I want to say, as everyone else has up here as well, we think it's very important to acknowledge the work of this committee in putting together this omnibus bill. Nothing brings the education committee together like this time of the year when we're talking about the omnibus bill. I do think it's worth saying here that we have, and my clients, the school principals, feel that we have an excellent public school system in Minnesota that's the result of strong legislative support together with strong parental support and the excellent teachers, administrators, and other people that work in the system. And that is in large part due to the work that we get out of this committee and other committees here at the legislature, and we value that and the resources that you've put into this bill to allow us to operate those schools. A few things that are very important to the school principal community: the college and the school provisions in here are really important to the secondary school principals, and we look at this as just an excellent move as we go forward to improve and strengthen that particular program. We like the changes very much that we're talking about in QComp and how to use those funds and expanding those funds. Those were important considerations in the legislative platforms of our principals group. We appreciate the Principals Academy and the support for that in the direction that we're going. And then, you know, we would echo the concerns of others as well. But, Madam Chair, this committee is very well run. It is interesting to watch the across-the-aisle handling of issues in here. And those of us on the lobbying side of the table appreciate always the treatment that we get here from you and the staff. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Aronson. You've made some friends. Ms. Keefe.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Elaine Keefe, and I'm here on behalf of both the Minnesota Library Association and the Information Technology Educators of Minnesota. As I've indicated in the past, the two organizations have a joint platform. And first of all, I want to say thank you for the increase in regional library basic system support. It is badly needed, and we are very, very grateful for it. And I want to especially thank Senator Stumpf, and even though he isn't here right now, Senator Saxhog, for introducing bills on this subject. I also want to thank you for the increase in telecommunications equity aid for schools. This, too, addresses a great need. And finally, we strongly support an amendment that, as Senator Wieger indicated, will be offered tomorrow to add some language from the governor's supplemental budget amendment that you heard last week to reform the way regional library telecommunications aid is distributed. We did work with the department on this and made some minor changes to the language, and we're very happy with the result, and we urge you to support that amendment tomorrow. I also want to speak very briefly on behalf of the Coalition for Children with Disabilities. I want to echo what Commissioner Casilius said about the need for increased funding for special education and also for expanding positive behavior intervention and supports to more schools across the state. As you negotiate the final education bill with the governor and the House, we hope you will consider increasing funding in these two areas. And finally, I want to thank you for including the funding for reducing seclusion and restraints, as Ms. Abderholden mentioned, in the bill. We really appreciate that, so thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Keefe. Next, we have Ann Hunt, and then we have Ann DeGroat and Jane Stockman.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Ann Hutton. I'm the Executive Director of SELCO, Southeastern Libraries Cooperating. It's headquartered in Rochester. And I came this morning to tell the committee thank you. The Regional Library Basic System Support Formula has been in effect since 1991. In that 25-year history, we've experienced a number of radical changes in library service. The bill that was offered by Senator Stumpf addresses some economical issues and some volatility in the formula. My compliments, my thanks to the chair and my authors of this bill, as well as the committee members and the staff for working very hard. I know the targets were tight, the funds were even tighter, and to find dollars in this budget to make the regional library basic system formula change almost a reality, I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Identify yourselves for the record. Go ahead.
Good morning, Madam Chairperson and members of the committee. My name is Ann DeGroot. I work for the Minneapolis Youth Coordinating Board, but I'm here today representing Ignite After School, which is Minnesota's after-school network. And I'm here to thank you on a beautiful day, looking forward to a beautiful weekend, for including funding for after-school programming in this year's budget. I don't think I need to tell you, most of you are parents, some maybe grandparents, the importance of after-school programming for our children and young people. And it makes a big difference in the way that they can complete school and in activities and projects that they can learn that are not necessarily included in the school day. I'm here today for Carrie Dennis and Conine, who is our executive director, who is at a conference on STEM and after school, working on ways to increase science, technology, engineering, and math work in after school programming for our children in the state. And this funding will go a long way toward helping our professionals work with more young people in a more stable and consistent way over the next 2 years. So thank you for your support. I'm of the understanding that there's nothing in the House side of the bill, so I look forward to assisting in any way we can with the conference committee in ensuring that this funding remains in the budget. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ms. Stockman.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Jane Stockman, and I'm the Associate Director of the Minnesota Council on Economic Education. And on behalf of the Minnesota Council on Economic Education, we would like to thank you for the inclusion of economic education in the omnibus bill. The appropriation will allow us to expand our programs in economics and personal finance education to teachers across the state through expanded online professional development and building a master teacher's corps. Through these programs, teachers throughout Minnesota will be taught by exceptional teachers and will be equipped to deliver top-quality economic and personal finance education to our Minnesota students, ensuring that all our students acquire the critical thinking skills in understanding how the economy operates, opportunities within it, and paths for personal fulfillment and success. Understanding of economics and personal finance is essential for college readiness and workforce development. In closing, Madam Chair and committee members, I would like to read a testimony from one of our teachers who has greatly benefited from professional development and economics education. He states he's from Melrose, and he teaches in Melrose area schools.
Do you wish to give his name? Or?
Sure, Adam Rushmeyer. When I graduated from college, my intention was to be a history teacher. I had no interest or background in teaching economics. I had only taken one undergraduate survey course in economics. Then the teacher that was teaching economics in our high school left, and it fell to me to teach these classes. I was not prepared at all for the task. Almost 10 years later, I have come to believe that exposing high school students to the economic way of thinking is perhaps the most important mission of a social studies teaching department. The Minnesota Council on Economic Education has helped me to introduce more than 1,000 Melrose area high school students to an economic way of thinking over the past 8 years. These students are better thinkers and better decision makers because of it. Thank you very much for your support.
Thank you. After Ms. Sandvig, we would have Mary Doherty, Holly Craigseth.
Craigworth.
Craigworth. And after that, Jane Lee.
That's it.
That would be the end of the speakers Mary. Who have requested to speak. Mary. No, Linda Sandvig first.
Madam Chair, I'm Mary Gilbert.
Oh, Mary.
Although,
yes.
People do confuse us all the time.
I do.
They used to refer to us as the Bobbsey twins when Linda lobbied for the Minneapolis School District, and sometimes something else when they didn't like us. Yeah. Madam Chair and members of the committee, I do want to thank you. I know that this committee had a tough job trying to put together a comprehensive and balanced bill given its target, and like the others before you, I just want to pledge our school community and our teaching staff and non-licensed staff to help you come up with a better target over the next 4 weeks. The school readiness and commitments to taking the cap off QCOMP and concurrent enrollment will be critical for us. We do have a large waiting list, and there is a stark difference between the students that attend our pre-K program and upon entering kindergarten and the ones that don't. Enrollment population also, our kids don't have as much easy access to PSEO because they don't have the transportation and the ability. So the more that we can offer as far as credit-bearing courses while they're in high school is a much better step up for students on their way to getting an associate or post-secondary degree. I share the concerns that were raised by the commissioner. The special education cross-subsidy is going to grow to $617 million by fiscal 17. So trying to address that formula, our district is cutting $50 million from our budget right now, and that amount, $2.5 million, is special education programs. And I have to tell you, that's really, really tough to do. Because the needs keep it growing, and as well as the ELL revenue. For the last several years, the newcomers to our district generally come without any formal education in their native language as well as any in English, and so having the extra resources for ELL, our district currently spends three times the amount of money we get through the ELL formula. So again, that's another cross-subsidy that we have. All right. Again, I pledge to work with you, our community, our staff, to try and address some of these general fund issues where we will be forced to be laying off teaching staff as a result of just not funding some of the basics. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. Mary Gilbert. Holly, Ms. Craig?
Dorth.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members. I'm Holly Craigthorpe. I'm a Minnesota parent and Minneapolis teacher, and here today to represent Educators for Excellence. We have 1,000 members here in Minnesota, and I want to thank you all, of course, for your hard work on the omnibus bill, and thank you for being at the table here this morning. I know this is a long hearing, and I really appreciate all the input that you've gathered. I want to express my concern for something that I don't think has been discussed today, and that is teacher preparation. We know that none of these bills will matter if we don't have effective teachers in the classroom, and in order to have effective teaching, we need effective preparation. I know that most teachers in the United States are in their first year, and I'm not sure what the statistic is for Minnesota teachers in their first year, but students simply can't afford to have teachers in a classroom, even if it's a classroom of 20 students or fewer. In an ideal situation, they just can't afford to have teachers with inadequate or irrelevant preparation. When I chose my teacher preparation program 15 years ago, I didn't have access to any meaningful information about the outcomes for teachers or for students. Other professions do have this data. Lawyers have this data for law school and doctors for medical school. And I've been listening to all of the concerns today about the budget targets, and as Minnesota parent, I share that concern. So I was trying to think of a way to include Senate File 664 in a way that doesn't require additional spending. I think there's a way to include an amended version of Senate File 664 that would only include a few things that teacher preparation programs themselves could post on their own website so that we wouldn't have to fund the Board of Teaching to do this. So we're asking for information on the four-year graduation rates, the licensure attainment, the satisfaction rates from teachers, and the employment rates. Yeah. We think that would be a great starting point to work from, and I thank you for hearing my comments today.
Thank you for your comments and your reference to Senate File 664. Ms. Lee. And then Mr. Dominguez, if you'd want to come forward, please.
Yes, Madam and Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. I'm Jean Lee, President and Executive Director of Children's Hope International, R&R Family Centers, and I head APAC, which is a consortium that is both national and now we're going international. I also wanted to mention that I'm a former Fortune 500 corporate auditor, and I've been looking at how these bills have been put together as far as how they address what they call the world-class education system and getting K through 12 and students at the right level into meaningful jobs. I work on comprehensive solutions, and we have dealt with world-class education and developing global workforce. For example, in the past, we've involved the high schoolers as far as the educational training that even the former prince of Morocco, now king of Morocco, was involved with. And the types of education that even Malawi, like the Nobel Prize winner, gets to. And I feel these types of educations can also be available to the students with the right content, material, and so forth. And that's what we were working on. In your legislation, I think I've heard people talk about IT certifications and world languages. And our efforts are kind of combining a lot of them and putting it in a more meaningful way that will achieve real results. For example, on the veterans issues, we previously, when there was a call out to find 100,000 jobs for veterans, we contributed about 5,000 jobs to that quota. And so when you're talking about having these students reach meaningful jobs, we feel that we have some real methods as far as using or getting that way. And we have a long list of partners. I give you a brief memo on some of the partners we have. And in the IT area, for example, I'm at the Medical Devices Conference, and I see where we can incorporate students as a part of that and also into the entrepreneurship that they're doing there. And we have more than the list as far as partners that we're developing. And I invite the schools to participate with us, and they can see me later. I believe we have the answers as far as what the governor's talking about in the world's best workforce. I also want to talk about, and I didn't have for you the maps, but it's been in the health committee, as far as all the shortages as far as professionals in all the areas in all the counties across Minnesota, both in primary care, in other mental health, and other areas. And our solutions actually address all these areas.
Ms. Lee, we appreciate your comments, and it certainly sounds like something we will want to look at and study during the interim or next session. If you could...
Yes.
Finalize your comments, please.
Okay. I submitted to you as far as some bills. One is in the legislature now in another committee related to a workforce coalition, and the other was previously related to how they serve veterans and families. And so what we are saying is that there's still gaps in the types of services in our K through 12 area that we need to revamp some of the content. And this is why I'm proposing that, you know, the groups work with us as far as accomplishing that. And just that if these are so that you could see how much the targets were that they were looking for, and that what we were looking for was a nominal amount as far as getting things rolling, because we have a unique certification that not only is it a dual certification for high school and college, but we have now we have some international people over from other countries that we're now talking of international certification applying and professional certification. So, and then as far as the ones you are providing funds to, they, like I say, can be as far as a part of this program, but also...
If we could talk about this maybe sometime in the future again.
Yes, thank you.
Appreciate your comments and sharing your information with us that you did distribute. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Dominguez.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. It's been a long time. My name is Augustine Willie Dominguez. I'm a former state representative here in the House. I just wanted to speak on behalf of Head Start. I'm currently with Head Start at this present time. And the reason why I came forward is because I didn't see any funds allocated to Head Start at this current time. And I think that we need to take a look at that, because we're hurting our most vulnerable children here. The ones that really need the support are low-income Head Start children. Those are the children that are needing to get a great start in our life. We talk about moving forward with the achievement gap. We talk about different areas as far as training. We talk about people in the higher educational, but we must also look at those that are just beginning to start their education in their lives. These are the Head Start students that come out from toddlers all the way up to fifth grade. I just want to address that because I think it's really a life-saving issue here with our toddlers, our Head Start children. This is something that we've been talking about for years and years and years. And when I see there's no funding allocated to Head Start, it really hurts me to the heart. Not only because I work for Head Start, it's because I've been fighting for these programs when I was in the House. And I see that the need in all of our communities, it's just not some communities, but all our communities need to have a Head Start, because that's where it begins with all of our children. So again, I thank you for addressing this committee, but please, please, look at all these areas where we can possibly put some dollars into Head Start. We're willing to work with you. We're willing to do whatever possible. But again, let's look at Head Start as a way to really achieve the achievement gap. The low-income people, the minority people that are struggling to get their education. And if I know all of you, it's in your heart. I know all of you have children one time or another. And you want the best for your children. So again, I thank the committee for the work that they're doing. But please, look at the gaps here, and the gaps here is Head Start. Let's look about putting some dollars in there. You heard from the commissioner. You hear from the governor that he wants money into those programs. So again, thank you for your time, and I really appreciate it.
Senator Wicker.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair, and I believe that will conclude the testimony at this point. And I would like to note one thing. We did not remove Head Start from funding. There's $40.2 million in the base, and I just want to make sure that everyone knows that. And we're very aware and supportive of the need for additional funds. And for those of you encouraging that, you're singing to the choir. But we'll continue on that effort and see what progress will hopefully be made as we go to conference committee in May. The plan at this point is for us to meet tomorrow at 8:30. We will then accept amendments. There will be at least a few that are technical that have been pointed out, and some others, for clarification. If there's any additional amendments that members would like to discuss amongst yourself, or you want to talk to the author that might have a provision with some suggestions, that would be a good time to do that before we meet tomorrow, if you have that chance. I will make myself available to any of you until tomorrow if you want to meet and to further go through some clarifications. There's been some very helpful guidance on some of the points in the testimony today, and I'm sure we'll look to further perfect the bill. I don't see additional money available at this point, but I want to reiterate that that's clearly our intent, and since we our hope, and since we did have that target reached from 350 to 360, 1.5, which is reflected here, we'll hope there's that momentum. And after all, it's considerably better than in the other body, as everyone's aware, but we'll continue to work on that. Any questions from members at this point on where we're at? Very good. There being no further business, the committee's adjourned.
Thank you.
Okay.